Thanks, Nathan. Good morning again. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. When D. Watkins published his first collection of essays called The Beast Side, Living and Dying While Black in America, he earned a place in the top ranks of writers and thinkers about the African-American experience. Tomorrow, his newest collection of essays will be released. It's raw, it's horrifying, it's fascinating, and ultimately, it's uplifting. It begins with the death, and it ends at the cusp of a new life. In between, it offers an intimate and stark insight into the world of illegal drug dealing. It's called The Cookup, a crack rock memoir. D. Watkins is a columnist for Salon, whose work has also appeared in the New York Times and many other national publications. He's also a lecturer in the School of Communication and Design at the University of Baltimore, and he joins me in the studio. Good morning. It's really great to meet you.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for having me. Yeah. It's an honor to be here.
Well, thanks for coming out. Let's start by asking you, let me ask you to read the very first brief essay that begins this collection.
Okay. I saw bullets rip through the faces of adolescents. I saw mothers abandon their kids. I saw fathers go off for milk to never return. I saw kids turn into killers, cops steal, and grandparents raise infants around here. I saw kids slap spit out of adults. I saw the devil. I saw a dude shake dude's hands before whipping out his gun and making dude put his hands up. We go through midlife crises at 15 around here. I saw friends kill friends. I saw friends kill friends and attend their wake. I saw teachers tell kids they die like their parents or siblings. What does hope look like? I saw shot dudes in wheelchairs be shot again while they sat in their wheelchairs. I saw shots that made bodies flip. I saw colostomy bags burst, guts spill, brains on the curb, brains on the wall, brains by the car, contusions, limbs knocked off, faces rearranged, eyeballs, small intestines and flesh chunks. I saw flesh sizzle like minute steaks. We all self-medicate around here. I saw murder after murder. I smelled murder. I saw bodies rot. I've read 115 obituaries, all with short bios. I know hate. I saw barefoot families. I saw drug monies by churches. I saw hoop dreams spark and fade. I saw all types of dreams spark and fade. I saw house raids. I saw families evicted. I saw AIDS spread. I saw thousands made and lost right in the middle of the place where cops enforce, terrorize, and collect. I saw it. I saw it all.
You saw it all, indeed. The first collection that you had, the B-side, was pieces that you had published in various places, the New York Times and Salon and stuff.
Yeah. This and like half of them were new, yeah.
Yeah, and then a bunch of new ones.
Yeah.
This is a memoir of this very incredible part of your life. One of the sentences that grabs me in this is that, you know, we go through midlife crises at age 15 around here. You were forced to grow up young, as so many kids are, who are living in places that are underserved and economically disadvantaged. At the end of the day, what do you hope folks are going to get out of this memoir, knowing about that part of your life?
I hope that they look at it and they say, wow, you know, this is a regular guy. He went to college. You know, he likes to do regular things. He likes ice cream. He likes to hang out with his friends. Regular guy who got caught up in this world and mess. So if a guy like myself, who, you know, who writes and teaches and mentors and does things like that, could have to go through that, imagine what type of, you know, talented geniuses are out there, right? There's people way smarter than me caught up in these types of situations. People who have, you know, the capability to maybe change the world if just one person believed in them. If a regular guy like me can do all of this stuff, imagine what we're leaving on the table out there, because a lot of people don't get the opportunity.
The first most obvious question I think a lot of folks would have, at least folks who are not involved in that community, folks who are outside of the world of drug dealing and outside of the world of East Side and the West Side of Baltimore, for that matter, how did you get out? I mean, what was the thing? You know, you were making tons of money. I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars dealing dope.
Towards the end, I wasn't making that much, not that much. Everything was beginning to fall off, for one. For two reasons. One, I wasn't inspired by money. I wasn't hungry for money. And, like, you know, a lot of people started going to jail and dying, and out, you know, it's definitely not inspiring at all. So that's one. Two, the person who was supplying those things died. You know, he was on dialysis, so you know he passed away. Three, I started having relationships with people who lived outside of my neighborhood, and I started going places and traveling and understanding different experiences and seeing different things. And some of those experiences made me feel like my neighborhood was this big. It was tiny. The woman I write about in the book, Sony, you know, challenged me to go to Europe. She challenged me to go to Egypt, and you know, we want these places. And suddenly, really, really, really expensive sneakers and cars and things like that, they just didn't really seem relevant anymore. It felt really small to me, and I felt like my mind was opening up, and I was learning different things, and I wanted to try different things.
Tell us about your brother, Bip.
A soldier, a revolutionary, a person with a big heart who was ahead of his time, and he's one of the major people I think about when you ask me, you know, what do I want people to take away? If he had a mentor, if he had someone to be able to let him know that he was funny and talented and sharp and could get into any circle of people and excel, then maybe, you know, this book never would have came out. He would have, you know, or maybe he would have written a better book, you know, because he was that smart.
We should let folks know that the book begins with his death. And he is killed right around the time that you're accepted into Georgetown University. And yeah, your plan was to go to Georgetown University.
Yeah, I got into a bunch of good schools. Like, I got into a lot of good schools, and that's partially because he kept me away from the street. And
but he was a dealer.
He was a street guy.
And you got into the business because of what he left behind at his death.
Yeah, my infatuation with him and, like, you know, how he spoke to people and how he moved was like it was just a world that I felt comfortable in. When you grow up in a place like East Baltimore, you know this. It's very, very, very regular for you to live in a neighborhood that's all black. If your family goes to church, you know, my mom's a church lady. She went to church, all black. If the people you play basketball with, everybody's black. So it's like you go into the middle of like a white world. It's culture shock. Like, it's different. It's not really, it's something that, you know, that you would need a mentor to say, look, you know, this is, you know, even like maybe like a student who had a similar experience as yours. Like, yo, this is what's going to happen. This is how you find your own lane and focus on your studies and enjoy your experience here. But, I was first guy in my family to ever finish college, to get accepted to college. So it was, I had to figure that out on my own.
Because it was after a semester at Loyola.
I didn't even make it the whole semester.
Yeah, not even the whole semester. You decided to come out. Your brother had left a large block of coke and heroin, right? And you turned that into a very profitable enterprise.
Yeah, and I did that. You know, I wish I could go back. If I would go back, I probably would make some different decisions. But I definitely... definitely felt like at that time in my life that was like the only thing I could do. And I also, if I'm, you know, being, you know, like all the way honest, I knew what could come from that. Like, you know, I wasn't going to kill myself, but I was really hoping that somebody would kill me. I put myself in a position a lot hoping that somebody would, and it didn't happen.
Sure.
It just didn't happen. Sure. Like, I guess it wasn't supposed to happen.
Well, I mean, that's the definition of depression, right? I mean, that's the definition of, you know, struggling with a loss, struggling with grief. It's difficult. The book is called A Crack Memoir, The Cook-Up by Dee Watkins. He joins me in the studio on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning. On Friday here on the show, I talked to a sociologist, a white sociologist from Hopkins, who spent 10 years studying more than 150 kids in East and West Baltimore. And one of the things that she says that came out of her research was that there's a narrative that says so many of the kids on the street are drawn to the street. They're drawn to the street because of the money. They're drawn to the street because of the notoriety. And it's very difficult to draw them away from the street into school and into, you know, regular sort of straight careers. She says that that's actually a myth, that almost all of the kids do what they can to avoid the street. What's your take on that?
I think it can go both ways. I definitely think that nobody starts out wanting to sell drugs. Like, no teacher starts out wanting to be a bad teacher, right? But then life happens, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely agree where she was coming from. Even as a kid, you know, we used to look up to the guys that sold drugs, but we wanted the money, but we didn't want to be them. And as you get older and as society starts to beat down on you and schools beat down on you and your home life isn't really... or your neighborhood is not really providing those opportunities to, you know, I didn't know any writers coming up. I didn't know any professional photographers. I didn't get a chance to work with anybody that was doing positive community work. And these are people that I get a chance to work with now. Like, you know, shout out to Wes Moore and Devin Allen. And these, you know, these are people who are like, who are changing the narrative. Like, we get a chance to change the narrative. You know, I live in East Baltimore. I live in Waverly up the street. I'm a professor. You know, I'm a writer. I'm in high schools in Baltimore like every week. I wrote a free 500 books. I wrote a book called Baltimore Sun, a collection of essays. I had it made. I partnered with Red Emmons and we gave away 500 free copies. Like, this is to people who don't, a lot of times, don't really have the money to buy these books. So it's like, I think what she's saying is absolutely right. But I think the missing key to that is more of us being accessible, like being able to be that example, you know, not being an example from like the back of some county somewhere, but like being in the city and being accessible.
So obviously you've changed dramatically since when you were 18, 19 years old and doing the things that you chronicle in this book. Has the neighborhood changed? I mean, are things changing? Do you see a movement, you know, in light of, you know, a year after the death of Freddie Gray, a year after people, you know, really starting to at least make noise about concentrating on these issues, about concentrating on inequality, economic inequality, racial inequality. Do you see the needle moving?
I think, you know... Yes, I do to a certain extent because of some of the people who I connected with. So overall, you know, from the outside looking in, pretty much everything looks the same. I haven't seen a big difference between police and community engagement. You know, I think, you know, and I don't think a year is enough time. You know, some police officers are doing it, you know, are doing a good job to try to build these connections and, you know, definitely they're trying, but at the same time, we're fighting against hundreds and hundreds of years of traditions that have been established. So the key thing is there are a lot of people, you know, who have been doing great community work and who are still doing community work. And now we have like new allies that are coming into the city who want to partner with us and do great work as well. So I think we will see some positive changes, but I also think that it's going to take like, you know, at least like 150, 200 years of hard work of like us, like creating these cultures of accessibility and skill sharing. And, you know, and you know, because, you know, there's no instant answer for empathy. You can't just, there's no pill you can take for it. You have to work towards these things.
150 years in the making and maybe 150 years in the changing.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wild. Well, thanks for coming in. It's really been great to meet you and great to read the book.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate it. Pleasure's mine.
D. Watkins, he's a columnist for Salon and a lecturer at the University of Baltimore's Klein Family School of Communications Design. His latest book is called The Cook-Up, a Crack Rock Memoir. You can meet D. Watkins when the University of Baltimore hosts a book launch event tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, in the Turner Learning Commons Town Hall. He'll also be featured, excuse me, at the Baltimore Sun Book Club on May 17th. We've got a link to more information on our website, WIPR.org/Maryland Morning. It's Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.